Extra time.
Hello and welcome back to today's Extra Time podcast. It's me, Mike Atkins, sitting in as host today. Patrick Van Straten is taking a well-earned week off. And with me today, I've got Doogie Critchley.
Hello, Atkins. Hello, people.
And Henry Hill is back again. How are you doing, Henry?
Hello, I'm good. Flattered to be asked back on the podcast, as always. So, thank you.
Well, as we say, I think every week, I think Patrick says it every week, you have quite a good reputation amongst the fans, so I'm sure they'll welcome
He's
you back.
He's adored.
Anyway, today...
Can I just get in anyway, there? Can I just, before we begin,
go on.
I'm sick and tired of being told I look like Timo Werner. It's not true.
Yeah, you look like Tim Ream. You're Tim Ream. You're not Timo Werner.
I want to see a comment below which says, this guy looks like Tim Ream, and I want to see a few hundred likes on that, because I'm sick and tired of this weird German connection I've got going on with the FD fan base.
You've opened the floodgates now, Henry. You're gonna get worse suggestions than that. It's like Doogie looking like that goalkeeper that signed for Roma last year or
Lopez,
something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And the only similarity really is the lack of hair.
Yeah, baldness. I get any bald footballer.
So today's podcast is going to be something a little different. We're going to sort of go quick fire around every single team that played this weekend. So there was 8 games, 16 teams, and we won't be looking at Manchester United, Manchester City, or whatever teams they were meant to be playing this weekend. They got postponed. Aston Villa and Burnley, I think it was. So if you're a fan of one of those teams, then we're sorry. We're not looking at those this week. But we will be looking at every single team in the Premier League except for them. And as I said, quick fire, we're going to go through it 2 or 3 minutes on each team. Hopefully all of you will be happy. And I'm going to kick it off with one of last night's matches. We're filming this on Tuesday morning. One of last night's matches, Wolves against Sheffield United. My team here is Wolves. And what I'm going to propose to you guys is, are Wolves the best team in the Premier League that isn't Liverpool, City or Chelsea? Look at it this way. Last season,
really?
Squad depth was an issue. Yeah. Last season, squad depth was an issue. Only 12 players started more than 10 games. But then you look at their team this season, there's more depth to it. They brought in the likes of, well, their biggest signing, probably Marcel, who was a Champions League semi-finalist last season. Jimenez, arguably world-class striker. Look at the teams that tried to come in for him over the summer or were linked with him. The likes of Barcelona, Real Madrid, Manchester United, all linked with him. And then also the likes of Neves, Patricio, also, I would argue, could... Well, Patricio is a world-class goalkeeper and Neves has definitely got world-class potential. I put it to you, are Wolves the best team outside, on paper at least, outside of Liverpool, City and Chelsea?
I'll kick off, Henry. I would say a firm no, actually, in my opinion. I think Man United are still like streets ahead of Wolves, in my opinion. I think Wolves have a very good system and they've got players that utilise that system effectively. I think Raul Jimenez is a brilliant striker. I think a lot of top six clubs, every top six club except for Man City, probably could use him in their squad pretty effectively. I think Traore is an excellent Premier League player. I don't think he's probably going to go any higher than Wolves. But, you know, they've got a fantastic system. They know it really, really well. They're very physical. They're very aggressive. They're very intense. But I don't think they're the fourth best team, personally. I mean, Henry, are you in agreement with that?
Yeah, I would agree with you there. I think at the end of last season, they really did sort of drop off significantly. I really like Daniel Podence. I think he's going to come on this season and be, you know, look really class throughout the campaign. But yeah, I just think when you look at Arsenal and you look at United, at the leaps that they've made as well, I agree with you, Diggy. I'm not sure. I mean, I like where you're coming from with this, Atkins. I enjoy the statement. But
good.
I think even if you look at their transfer business this summer, Fabio Silva... for 40 million or whatever, and he scored one goal at senior level. It just doesn't, I don't know, I could probably be completely wrong about this. We could all be completely wrong about this. But yeah, I'm just a bit nervous to say they are a top four side at the moment.
I think Connor Cody as well, final point, is magnificent in the centre of a back three. I think his distribution's one of the best in Europe. I'm not even joking with that. I think he's a phenomenal long-range passer. But yeah, I just don't see them as the fourth best side as it stands. But it's a good hot take to kick off the show, Atkins.
Brilliant. Well, I'm glad that's a good way to kick off the show. Let's go on to Henry, your first team. We've all got a list of sort of 5 or 6 teams from the weekend. And well, yeah, Henry, you're going to kick us off with one of yours now.
Sure. Well, following on the theme of looking at last night's game, so I'm going to look at Chelsea quickly. It's kind of hard to put a finger on what Chelsea need next. Obviously, they've had this world-famous transfer window. They've done exceptionally well. Obviously, the goalkeeping department is the impending change that we're still waiting for. This, it could all well be sorted by the time this podcast goes out. You know, Fabrizio Romano is adamant that Edouard Mendy's transfer to Chelsea is complete from Rennes in France. I mean, this is the thing. Kai Havertz looks a bit slow yesterday. I just think time is what Chelsea really need. I don't know if they need exclusively a new player beyond the goalkeeper position. I mean, the only thing I'd ask you both is if you think Declan Rice would really improve that Chelsea side for £45 million. Matkins, you might be a bit skewed on this subject. But yeah, I think just Chelsea really need time more than anything just to get all these players to work together. And you know, they've got a really big squad now. They've got a deep midfield. And I do worry, you know, they've got a lot of players who are all going to want to play. And there's not going to be loads of opportunity in there sometimes. But beyond that, I don't think they need a new player as such. I think as a window goes, they've done exceptionally well.
Yeah, I think they're as close to complete on terms of what you'd want from a window. If they do get Edouard Mendy in, who's probably not, you know, what Chelsea fans dreamed of in goal, but definitely a step up on Kepa. I thought last night, I could only watch the final 30 minutes, but I caught up with the highlights today, and I actually thought, you know, Timo Werner showed all the signs that we were expecting, looked ready-made for the Premier League in terms of his pace, his anticipation, seemed to absolutely love it as well in his post-match interview as well, which was, I think was one of the most promising.
Really good looking player. He's a really good looking player. Yeah, so that's
there was quite a few people that were sort of baffled around Kai Havertz playing on the right wing, which I thought was quite interesting because he has obviously played there beforehand, but the form that earned him a move to Chelsea and that really made him, you know, the talk of Europe this summer was when he was playing as a false nine or as a number 10 towards the back end of last year, and then very much a nine when Kevin Volland got injured as well. So Kai Havertz being used on the right probably wasn't his best use of it, but I thought he had a solid enough debut as well. So yeah, things are looking pretty good for Chelsea, but something is still to be worked on. I mean, Kepa letting that shot through him as well, yeah. Not good. So a bit mixed there. Another team that I thought had, well, actually, in terms of there was no downsides, was actually Arsenal. I thought Arsenal were awesome at the weekend against Fulham. Have to say, I didn't think Fulham were particularly strong opposition. I didn't think Reed or Kearney really got a grip of the game in central midfield. They gave far too much time and space to all Arsenal's players. And it just felt like a bit of a vindication because we've been bigging up Gabriel for the best part of a year now, since he sort of broke through at Lille. And, you know, we saw his performances in the Champions League last year, against, you know, Chelsea, Ajax, Valencia. So some top strikers in there, in that mix, you know, Rodrigo, Giroud, Abraham, Osimhen, etc. He wouldn't have obviously played Osimhen. But yeah, Tadic, Quincy Promes, etc. And he excelled in the Champions League and he came into the Premier League and he had a shaky start. He nearly sort of misread a back pass from Maitland-Niles, which wasn't fully his fault, I didn't think, actually. But actually really grew into the game from there and I thought he was magnificent. And having a left-sided centre-back as well just like completely spreads the play, especially when you've got Tierney on the left-hand side, on the left of a back three, who is magnificent, I think, at the moment. He is in such good form. And then I thought the final thing that I took away from it was just a little bit of self-vindication as well, because on Sunday Vibes, like a month or so ago, I basically argued that I thought Willian was quite a good signing, just because his experience at the top level, his consistency over the last 5 or 6 years, I think he's got 10 or more league goal contributions in 5 of the last 6 years. So when Hazard was occasionally having a bit of a down stretch, it was actually Willian who was the most consistent Chelsea attacker throughout that time. Obviously, Hazard's got a much higher ceiling. But I thought Willian was excellent. 2 assists on the night, involved in the third goal. So really promising start for Arsenal, albeit against a pretty hapless Fulham side on the day. Signs, really promising signs for Arteta, and kept that momentum going from the back end of last year too.
Do you know something I heard about Arteta over... I read an article yesterday. I can't remember what website. It might have been ESPN or something like that. But Arteta... Because obviously there's no crowd, so you can hear a lot more of the game at the moment. According to this ESPN reporter, Arteta on the sideline was communicating his instructions to his players in 4 different languages.
Really? Flair.
I doubt you would have seen from... Maybe from Arsene Wenger, but you definitely wouldn't have seen from Unai Emery. I can't think of many other... many other managers in the Premier League where, I mean, I'm sure the likes of Jose Mourinho, Carlo Ancelotti, etc. can speak multiple languages, but they don't seem like the type to convey it in whichever language is necessary, if that makes sense. So I feel like I feel like with Arteta at the helm, I mean, we've seen it from like the Arsenal fans we work with, but everything just seems a lot more positive around Arsenal, sort of a positivity we haven't seen since, well, probably for 3 or 4 years, a positivity that, you know, they might actually do something in the league this year, obviously not win it or finish top two, but could quite comfortably reach the Champions League. Like, I think, I mean, we'll come on to it with the other teams as well later on, but I feel like the Champions League, we're going to have a proper fight for the Champions League this year. I reckon there could be three, four, five teams going for, effectively going for third spot.
Yeah. I mean, Atkins, if we go back to that game, what was it about Fulham that you think, what was it that really worried you? Go on, let's get this over with early. what was your taking? By the way, I'd like people to know that I wasn't allowed to review Fulham in case of any kind of...
For the exact same reason, I've not allowed myself to review West Ham, which I'm sure you...
Yeah, go on.
I'm about to rip into Fulham and you're going to, you know, rip into West Ham in a minute anyway.
Go for it.
So I think the main problem with Fulham is just their defence. You sort of look at their defensive lineup. Obviously, they 2 years ago in the Premier League... I can't remember if they had... Did they have the worst defence in terms of goals conceded 2 years ago?
Yeah, they did. 81 they conceded.
So 81. Three of that back four started on Saturday. And the only one... So Joe Bryan, Tim Ream and Dennis Odoi all started on Saturday. The only new entry to that defence was Michael Hector, who made his Premier League debut at the age of 28, which suggests to me he probably isn't a Premier League player, or at least... I mean, I know he played for Chelsea for 5-6 years or however long, but he never made an appearance for them. So, I mean, defence is quite clearly Fulham's big issue. They brought in Kenny Tett from Lyon. Was it from Lyon, Henry? Mm-hmm. Who looks like...
Yes, Kenny Tett.
Yeah, he looks like he could be a good player, but, you know, you're hardly going to make the defence more solid from right back. And neither will the likes of Ola Aina or Anthony Robinson, who's coming from a team that got relegated to League One, controversially sure, but got relegated to League One. And when you look at the shots they conceded 13 shots, 5 of which were in the 6-yard box, and an XG against of 2. And sure, Arsenal look like they'll be one of the better attacking sides in the Premier League this season, but it's still worrying to see how poor Fulham's defence seems to be. It's almost like nothing has changed from 2 years ago, when 2 years ago everybody said the defence was a big problem.
Yeah, I mean, I won't go into it in too much detail. I agree that the signings of Tetti and... I like the signings of Aina, and Robinson actually would be a long-term solution if Joe Bryan did get snapped up by a bigger club, because he's probably the only defender in that back four who would be bought by someone looking to push on in the left-back role. So, Tetti's not an improvement on Dennis Odoi, who isn't a Premier League player. I'm going to just defend Michael Hector a little bit. I think he is... he deserves, like, this opportunity at the top level.
I'm not disagreeing with that at all.
Yeah, it's just... the problem with that game is they conceded a really stupid goal after 8 minutes of actually pretty decent football, if that makes sense. You know, even Jay from FD, he texted me saying, "Wow, Fulham are looking good here."
What was it you put on the FD group chat? This is the best 8 minutes you'll see from Fulham all season, something like that.
Yeah. And then we conceded that rubbish goal, and then you could just see the confidence going. So I just hope they just brush this under the table and go again and just like start afresh. However, you know, it's easier said than done in the Premier League, but yeah, it's a tricky one. But I didn't enjoy that game one bit, I will say.
Go on then, Henry, who's
if we up? Move on if we have a look at Leicester, so they had a really strong opening display against West Brom. Every season I think Jamie Vardy's going to slow down, he might have lost it, but this season, I mean, look, he's gone to score twice again, albeit from the penalty spot, but he still showed that kind of tenacity that we've all got to know and love. I think really where Leicester need to improve is they just need a bit more defensive depth. They've been heavily linked with a Patrick Van Straten favourite in Wesley Fofana from Saint-Étienne, so that would be a really interesting deal, especially if they get it for about the 30 million mark, which I believe that's roughly what they're looking at. I mean, I was sceptical about Timothy Castagne, but then he obviously had an amazing debut, so a lot of kudos to him, because I wasn't sure. He didn't really have the attacking numbers last season to suggest he'd be sort of up there, the very best fullbacks in the Premier League. But I mean, he looked excellent. It was a great goal as well, really good header. It just worries me, because I remember a game against Tottenham last year, they lost 3-0 towards the back end. I think Soyuncu had been sent off in the game before, and they played a back five of Ryan Bennett, Wes Morgan, Luke Thomas and James Justin, and that obviously got exposed by Tottenham, who didn't really score very much at that moment. So I mean, it looks like James Justin will be given the opportunity to play right back a bit more. Left back, which, you know, fair play if Brendan Rodgers has seen something in him there. But I do think they need maybe another player in there who could maybe help out. And also, I do think they need a attacking right midfielder as well. I like Harvey Barnes on the left. But they've got a lot of these players who can sort of play in the middle, in the sort of the number 10 role. Tielemans, James Maddison, even Dennis Pratt. All these players can roughly play in the middle. And I think Ozzy Perez maybe benefits from playing in there as well, sort of behind the striker. You can correct me if I'm wrong on this one. But I think, yeah, Damari Gray doesn't look up to scratch. So maybe they could use with one more attacking outlet who can maybe drop in and help Vardy as well. But other than that, it's interesting to see. I think I sort of, in my mind, I wrote off Leicester a little bit after last season. I thought, well, if they can choke that hard going down the back straight of last season, then how are they going to go again? But that was a really solid opening game. But like with Arsenal, it was against West Brom, who are probably the other favourites to go down.
Yeah. I kind of disagree with you in terms of, like, I didn't think the performance was very good at all until, like, 70 minutes, to be honest. I thought Leicester were, like, really struggling to progress the ball through, like, the final third. I thought Vardy was really isolated. I didn't think, as you said, I didn't think much of Ayoze Perez at all. I actually thought it was quite worrying from Leicester until the final 20 minutes when it looked like West Brom tired, and then they got sort of two penalties to sort of cap it off. I wasn't very impressed with Leicester at all, but, you know, that's the beauty of this game. You know, everyone can have disagreements. Another worrying performance, I thought, was Southampton. I think everyone at the back end of last year assumed that they were going to start this year really well. I think I put them in the top 10 of my predictions.
I think as well, Doogie, with Southampton. I'm sure that last week that graphic came out of the most optimistic fans for the season. And I'm pretty sure Southampton were right at the top of that list, had the most optimistic fans heading into this season. So
absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And I was kind of watching this in the background because I was watching Sunderland Bristol Rovers at the time. which also was a bit of a disappointment from a Sunderland fan perspective anyway. But then watched our match of the day, and actually Southampton really struggled to get, like, Danny Ings into the game. I didn't think Che Adams, having finished the season really strongly, had a very good game at all. He missed a very good chance. And actually, I think they're quite light in central midfield now. I know that they've obviously lost Højbjerg, but their central midfielders are really Romeo, Ward-Prowse and Armstrong, because Will Smallbone seems like he prefers to play on the right-hand side, and he looks a really technical, quite promising young player, but probably you wouldn't want to back him for sort of 38 games in the middle of midfield. So they could kind of do with an enforcer, and like, unlike on all my other suggestions, I actually did a little dipping into the transfer market or some potential transfers that they could do, and I actually thought of Otavio from Bordeaux, who's the defensive midfielder there. He's played very consistently and consistently well for a few years though. I think he's done 4 years in Ligue 1, and last year, like, not a very good ball, you know, presser. He's not a good dribbler, effectively, is what I'm trying to say. He's not particularly creative, but massive defensive numbers. I think it was close to 5 tackles and interceptions. He started this season very well. Very solid passer as well. Just because I think they'll need another player alongside Romeo, and then they could maybe push Ward-Prowse further forward as well, because I feel like he's slightly wasted in that sort of two that Hassan also likes to play in the centre of midfield. But Southampton, really disappointing start. I know Gaeta had to make that good save at the end, but I was expecting more from them against the Crystal Palace side, who weren't able to start their new signings in Ferguson or Eze. So pretty worrying for Southampton. It wasn't a good start at all, but they've got a good opportunity to get back on the, you know, winning ways against Spurs this weekend, who are also in need of a win.
Yeah. Doogie, do you think... So I did watch that game, and I think maybe, because they performed so well in the back end of last season, teams are suddenly having more of a game plan when they're approaching Southampton. I don't think it's this kind of... People know what they're coming up against when they play Southampton now. And if you look at what Crystal Palace did, they formed really two solid defensive lines. They were very rigid. There was lots of times where all their players were in the same camera shot. And then they just broke at pace. I thought, you know, Andros Townsend played really well, and Zahar looked decent as well. And I just worry for Southampton, is that teams will be more prepared when they go up against them because they realise how well they played. And you're right, Che Adams hardly got in the game at all. I think Danny Ings touched the ball a few times on the edge of the area, but never looked like really getting off a shot in a really good area on the pitch. So yeah, I just worry that maybe Southampton teams are going to put a lot more thought into how they approach them on the basis of their success last year.
Absolutely. They play such a unique style as well. I think they were one of the lowest in the league for possession, but pretty good shot numbers. They basically play, you know, the stat nerds on Twitter call it verticality. They play back to front very fast. They don't really care about building up the play. They play in behind, try and counter-attack as quickly as possible. But as you say, like, Palace are the worst sort of side you want to counter-attack against because they are so prepared just to sit incredibly deep and break themselves. And Roy Hodgson sort of did over Hasenhüttl quite effectively.
Yeah,
and put, like, all the doubts about Crystal Palace. Well, not quite to bed, obviously. It's one game in the season, but a very strong start for them, yeah. I thought.
With Southampton as well, I think part of the issue is the system they play in that is so intense and so physical, and teams have had, what, 3 weeks of pre-season, half what they would usually get. And I feel like it might just take a few games for Southampton to sort of get into the rhythm that we saw them towards the end of last season before they sort of start to kick on. But I don't think Southampton fans necessarily need to worry about anything this season in the same way. Put it this way, there's going to be no 9-0s against Southampton this year, is there?
No, for sure. I think they'll be comfortable mid-table for me. It was just not a good start.
Right, we'll move on to the team they played, actually, to Crystal Palace. You mentioned Gaeta there as having to make that one really good save. I've actually put here as my main point for Crystal Palace, Vicente Gaeta will be their key player this season. Because if you look at their attack, if you consider this to be their strongest starting lineup, I'm not sure if they were anticipating Eze being a starter or more of a sort of impact rotation player, at least at the beginning of the season. Crystal Palace only had 5 shots against a clearly out of shape Southampton team, and after the game Roy Hodgson said that Zaha still wants to leave and still is still quite open about wanting to move.
Did he? Yeah, I missed that.
So yeah, Zaha still wants to leave, which, you know, he's clearly their best player, we've been saying it for years. Crystal Palace's defence is suspect at the best of times, but if you look at the injuries currently on their defensive line, Van Aanholt is injured, Sacco is injured, Cahill is injured, Tompkins is injured, and Kelly, who was on the bench, I think, at the weekend, according to Crystal Palace fans anyway, still isn't fit from his injury he sustained at the end of last season. But that's 5 defenders that all arguably are of starting quality for Crystal Palace, all out at the start of the season. And Gaeta made 5 saves at the weekend, no keeper, at least ahead of the Monday night fixtures, no keeper made more than the 5 saves that Gaeta made. So I think their season hinges on how well Gaeta will. If Gaeta plays as well as he did last season, then I think Crystal Palace will be safe. But I reckon a lot hinges on him.
I agree. I wrote about him as one of the best, most surprising things of 1920 season. You know, I think they got him on a free transfer, and he's just been unreal for them. A massive step up on Wayne Hennessy, in my opinion. But yeah, I think they probably, in terms of what Crystal Palace might need, they probably will need, if Zaha does get the move he wants, and he does want a move, I'm still not convinced the team's going to come in and pay the 40, 50, 60, whatever kind of money that they're after for him. But yeah, they probably do need an attacker, just bolstering that department as well. I mean, I think Michy Batshuayi is a great addition to their forward line, and Abrucci Eze as well. But yeah, if Zaha does, they're going to have to sort of panic buy someone, which is a bit of a worrying sign. But yeah, I think actually, judging the first game, I think the signs are good for Crystal Palace. If they just stick to what they're good at, I don't think it's going to be a particularly inspiring season. But I mean, they made a really big point that Crystal Palace will really enjoy the fans coming back. They're one of the teams which they really relish their stadium, the noise that Selhurst Park creates. So I think, I mean, for them to go and win 1-0 on their opening day in an empty stadium, I think was amazing, because they really do use the crowd in their advantage when they're there.
Anything to add, Doogie?
No, I agree. I've got a bit of a soft spot for Palace in that my girlfriend's dad's a season ticket holder. I've been to Selhurst Park a lot of times. It's an absolute cauldron. It's probably the best live atmosphere I've ever experienced in football, to be honest. And they will, you know, they'll support their team to the end. I think it is going to be a really difficult season for them. But I like how their attack could be put together, especially if they keep hold of Sorloth as well, who for me is a massive step up on Benteke. Absolutely killed it in Turkey last year as
I heard,
well.
I actually heard something about Sorloth. There are some... that he's still on loan in Turkey this season, I think. And the move becomes permanent if he plays in half of Trabzonspor's league games.
Are you sure? Yes, I thought he'd come back.
No, he hasn't. So basically, it was a 2-year loan deal. And basically, any team who wants to buy Sorloth, because I can get into that now, because I was about to talk about Tottenham, who have been looking at Sorloth. So basically, the deal with Alexander Sorloth is that he is on a second year loan, and they do have the option to make it permanent. I mean, perhaps in the way that Mackenzie, you've just suggested. But so if you want to buy Saul off, you're not negotiating with Crystal Palace, you're negotiating with Trabzonspor, who basically have to buy him for the minimal fee they agreed with Crystal Palace and then sell him on again. So it's quite like an interesting transaction.
A bit like the Luka Jovic from last season when everyone was negotiating with Frankfurt, even though he was technically a Benfica player.
But yeah, exactly.
That's true. I mean, so Tottenham, I think it's blatantly obvious that Tottenham probably need a backup striker. I mean, we've been saying this forever. So the three names that I read about today when I was looking: Alexander Sorloth, Arkadiusz Milik, and now Bas Dost has entered the equation, which I'm not sure is the name that
is the man of the 11th hour, Bas Dost.
Yeah, I don't know if that's, I mean, what, he's like 6'6", isn't he, or something like that. He's pretty mobile for the player that he is.
He played alright in parts last year.
Yeah, he scored 8 times, he's 31 years old, so it's kind of like a Fernando Llorente part 2 in my opinion, that one. But Milik would be an interesting deal. I read they're going to pay him a £5 million sign-on fee if he agrees a 90 grand a week contract. I'm not quite sure about that. He scored 11 times, but like you said, Sorloth scored 24. So yeah, they do need a backup striker. I think it's a real shame they didn't go for Ollie Watkins. I never quite understand the finances to do with Tottenham. But I think, you know, Ollie Watkins would have been a wicked transfer because he can play in that central position. He can always he can also drift out to the wings, which is where they would be... where a lot of their forward players can operate in as well, in terms of Moura and Son. But yeah, I mean, in that opening game against Everton, they were outshot 15-9, but you kind of come to expect that from Mourinho's side. But they also committed 15 fouls to Everton 7, which shows like the lack of energy and fitness that Mourinho complained about, really. You know, they were sort of beaten to every ball. I mean, I'm not sure he's going to talk about Everton next, but I thought they looked really refreshing and they looked class. But yeah, I also think this is what I wanted to ask you two, because I wasn't sure when I was writing about this. I was wondering, do they go for another central defensive midfielder? Now Dyer's dropped into defence. Obviously, they brought in Højbjerg, but he's really the only one that operates in that way. Winks doesn't. Do they get in another one just to maybe complement Højbjerg, like an Ibrahim Sangare from Toulouse, or do they sort of hope that Ndombele comes back and performs, because he didn't play very well when he came on off the bench? Or do they go for a more creative midfielder? So I thought the thing that really let them down against Everton is they took off Ali, who was their kind of creative midfielder in the hole, and they bought on Moussa Sissoko, and they just lost that connection. They lost that pivot between the forward line and the midfielders. It suddenly became like a midfield three, and then you couldn't really progress the ball that well. Like Moussa Sissoko, him, Winks and Moura all failed to register a key pass in that game, and at least Ali had registered one before he came off. So I was wondering if you think they need another creative midfielder in that slot as well to complement Ali and Lo Celso, who we haven't quite seen the best of, but I am looking forward to this season.
Yeah, for me, I think that his best team would have Højbjerg and Lo Celso as a double pivot, if Ndombele isn't brought back into the fray, which he probably should be. But I think Lo Celso would actually complement Højbjerg really well. And his sort of tenacity, his sort of willingness to put himself about, and his ability to break with the ball at speed, Lo Celso, and pick a pass, would definitely be an upgrade on Winks, which I totally agree. It seemed like a strange midfield combination when you were planning on, well, seemingly planning on not dominating possession. Winks is, you know, he tries his best, Winks, but he's not a defensive midfielder in the traditional sense of the word. He's very good at picking the ball off the centre backs and spreading the play occasionally, but in a game that you're not actually dominating the ball, he's slightly redundant, really. So yeah. I think Lo Celso alongside Højbjerg is perfect. I don't think you need another central midfielder. But thinking about Spurs' business, I think what's the weird thing for me is that in January they decided to sign Steven Bergvijn, who I think looks like a great player. I think it's a good pickup. But why didn't they get an out-and-out nine then instead of Steven Bergvijn? Where actually on the wing positions with Lucas, Son, Sessegnon can play there, Lamella, they're actually quite deep on the wings. Like, I would have gone for an out-and-out nine in January, and that could have saved you a lot of problems towards the back end of the year, particularly pre-lockdown when they were really struggling with injuries. And they potentially could have finished in the top four. I mean, just watching this Amazon documentary, you forget that they were 1 point off the top four at one stage. And if they'd signed a nine in January rather than waiting until the summer, I admit that, you know, it might be more expensive to get the deal done in January. But I feel like they are just delaying and delaying the inevitable, and there's no side in the top half that needs one position more than Spurs need a striker, in my opinion.
I'd forget
midfield. I'd actually forget even signing another centre back or a left back in, you know, which they need to as well, and just get this striker done. And if it is Bas Dost, I don't think it's the best signing, but I actually think, you know, they just need someone to
just ease the load on Harry Kane, or even in a situation like the weekend when they're 1-0 down and Harry Kane's still playing, you can just take off a midfielder and then put on Bas Dost, or you know, your Llorente like figure. Just
absolutely,
instead of trying to switch up how you're creating the chances, maybe you need somebody else there to get on the end of them. But yeah, exactly.
And games, sorry Atkins, yeah, games that you're winning easily, which hopefully Spurs will do at points this season. They barely did under Mourinho at the back end of last year. Nothing was easy for them. Take off Harry Kane when you're winning after 75 minutes. Give him a rest, because he basically never gets taken off. And everyone's so surprised that he runs himself into the ground, because he's such a Tottenham man. He absolutely loves playing for the club. He's so committed, and he just breaks down all the time. So just sign a striker.
At least Llorente, he wasn't amazing, but at least he offered that. Do you know what I mean? At least he could come off the bench. At least he's a decent forward on his day. At least he did offer that. It's just stunning that they kind of just, he's gone and they've never really filled that position. It is surprising.
Doogie, do you want to move on to your next team?
Yes, so I'm going to talk about Brighton now, who were excellent last night, actually, I thought, for long stretches. I could only watch the final 30 minutes, but I caught up with the highlights this morning. And actually, I was just looking at their team, and it's really well put together now, I would say. I think a back three of Dunk, Webster and Ben White is, you know, there's three very confident ball players there. There's a lot of height as well, which sounds really stupid, but actually at points in Premier League games, you just need, you know, big men in both boxes make such a massive difference. And I thought Tarek Lamptey on the right-hand side of a back five was absolutely magnificent. I didn't think Solly March, probably not an out-and-out left wing-back, did fine, but Tarek Lamptey on the right-hand side was absolutely insanely good. And he actually continues his really good form since going to Brighton in January initially. No, I think it was permanent even in January. But yeah, last night, 6 tackles and interceptions, 2 dribbles, 2 key passes, 1 shot. Really comfortable, like receiving the ball under a hell of a lot of pressure at points, high up the pitch, keeping hold of the ball really well, linking with Adam Lallana. I thought he looked excellent. And the one thing I'd say about Brighton is that their forward options, now they've got rid of Glenn Murray, who's gone to Watford, they're all quite similar players, like Connolly, Trossard, Morpay. They're all quite diminutive forwards, work hard, very energetic, prepared to link up the ball, prepared to go in behind, but there's not like a natural target man. So I was thinking that, you know, maybe they could do with a sort of physical number 9 to complement their players. I suppose that might be for Florin Andone. Maybe is who Potter got in mind. But I think they probably could do with another physical 9. But yeah, really promising signs from them. I thought they gave Chelsea a hell of a lot of issues in the first 60 minutes from all accounts, although I wasn't watching it live, but on the highlights on that bit. And then, yeah, Chelsea saw the game out in the end. But really promising from Brighton. It sort of confirmed them in my mind as not really going to be in this relegation dogfight this year.
Henry?
Yeah, no, I agree. I was watching it sort of from the corner of my eye, and I thought they've always looked impressive under Potter. I think they do play nice football. They've got a slight edge about them. I agree. If they could just get a bit more of a clinical finisher up top, then I think they could be... I don't think they're going to do amazingly well in the league table, but I think survival is really what Brighton are going for. And yeah, I agree. I think they've got a really solid base in defence. I think, you know, they've held on to Lewis Dunk, which is a new signing in itself, because I think he could have easily gone somewhere else. Mm. And so yeah, I think it's just important for them just to stick to what they do. It was a shame to see Adam Lallana injured straight away. It was a pity to see him go off by half time. So, I mean, if they can sort of fill that hole and keep the creativity in the midfield, then yeah, it could be a good season for them.
Brilliant. So I think we'll move on to the next team. I mean, we're going to come to it eventually anyway, I guess. So I'm going to do Newcastle, and I'm sure Henry will just follow that straight up with West Ham.
here we go.
But Newcastle, and obviously this is with the caveat they did only play West Ham, but Newcastle, they might actually score some goals this year. Signing Callum Wilson. So I thought the combination of Andy Carroll, who looked... I mean, obviously, he's in his 30s now. He's he's going to be surely one of like the slowest players in the league and all that sort of stuff. But he looked fit and he looked good, and it was the Andy Carroll that West Ham fans wanted at West Ham. But the combination of Carroll and Wilson up top, I thought, really, really worked. And if you look at their squad, I mean, where did Newcastle finish last year? 13th, 14th, around there or so. Attack seemed to be the only thing that Newcastle were really lacking last season, in terms of what they were as a squad anyway, because they had a perfectly competent defence, which I think is even better now. Jamal Lewis has come in, who I think Steve Bruce said after the game, Jamal Lewis was his man of the match. And the midfield's always had that sort of bit of bite with the Longstaff brothers. Hendricks now coming from Burnley, who had a brilliant game against West Ham, so it has to be said. And now they've got a goal scorer who, he might not have been in the best of form towards the end of last season, but I mean, who in the Bournemouth shirt was? And it's weird because Newcastle seemed like exactly the sort of team we thought they were, just with added goals, which, I mean, football's all about scoring goals, so I think Callum Wilson's almost the perfect signing for them at this stage for what the club is and for what their realistic ambitions probably are.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought it was a really it wasn't a great game, to be honest, but Newcastle like created the better opportunities. I thought their goals, particularly Jeff Hendricks, was exceptional, really. And it's a sort of signing that went under the radar, slightly because it's a free transfer. He's not, you know, the youngest or potentially the most exciting, but I actually think it's a pretty astute pickup, to be honest. I think he's been very handy for Burnley. He was linked with AC Milan, and for good reason. You know, he would have lit up the San Siro. And he can play in a variety of positions as well, which I think is quite crucial for Newcastle. He can play as a 10, he can play as a wide right midfielder, he can play in a midfield 2 as well. So, you know, Jeff Hendrick, viva Jeff Hendrick. I thought it was great.
Oh, dear. I mean, listen, I've been banging the Steve Bruce drum the whole time I've been at FT, and I've got a lot of stick for it, for saying Brucey Ball was the way forward. But I think, you know, I think there's this big idea that every team needs to play like attacking, flowing football. And if you just go back to Fulham, they play nice football when they do the ball, but that doesn't always work in the Premier League. You have to be a bit clever. You have to sort of stick to your guns. And I think that's what Newcastle do really well. They've got a system under Bruce. He's clearly got them all playing in the right direction. And you're right, they made some really good signings in the window. I mean, who's the guy from Lyon? No, from Lille, they're trying to sign now, the central midfielder.
Samare.
I mean, if they get him, then that would be sort of like a complete midfield, really, if you sort of, yeah, for their level, for what they're going for. All right, well, let's get into West Ham United. Okay. I mean, it's hard to say what don't they need, I think, is the thing I would start that with. Centre-back, I think, is the opening thing I'd address. Issa Diop and Angelo Ogbonna on the opening day. I mean, it's like a good... It's all right. I think they really could use a bit more reassurance at the back, because I think this is a team who are going to really play off confidence this season. And if they're looking shaky and conceding goals, then it's not going to be good. So obviously they want James Tarkowski. I just don't see that transfer happening really at all. I can't see him wanting to do that beyond monetary reasons. But he, I mean, ideally he'd be a really good option at the back. I've also seen today they're about to launch an outrageous loan deal for Rob Holding at Arsenal, who's, you know, he started for Arsenal this weekend. I'd be surprised.
Played well.
But I thought he looked really, really assured against Gabriel at the back. So, I mean, that would also be a good deal. I'm not sure whether they could get over the line. I mean, it's hard to know who they're targeting and who they could actually bring in. I also think they could really use a new left back. Aaron Creswell, he didn't have a great season last year. 0 assists. Against Newcastle, he registered 0 shots or key passes or dribbles. So he didn't get any of those at all. And yeah, last season, all of his key passes and shot numbers were all below his normal average. And I think he's just struggling a little bit as well. And then even looking further forward in the sides, Fornals just really... That was a really poor performance to kick off the season. I mean, I'm going to give Jared Bowen a bit of credit, because I thought he played really well in the survival push last season. So I'll let him off sort of having a bad game. But yeah, Fornals just really hasn't kicked on. He only got 2 goals and 5 assists. And he was lumped off in the second half versus Newcastle after managing just 1 shot. So yeah, I mean, they need some statement signings. I disagree. I think they've spent a lot of money in the last few years on players that haven't paid off. So I get a bit annoyed when I hear West Ham fans saying there's no investment, there's no this, there's no that. Because I don't think it's technically true. Yeah. They have bought players. They've spent a lot of money on players. They just haven't worked out. That's the bottom line. I mean, Felipe Anderson looked good for a bit. Sebastian Haller just hasn't really kicked on. And there's a lot of these kind of... £25 to £40 million signings who really just haven't made it work so far. So yeah, I get really annoyed when I hear all the moaning about West Ham negativity. But yeah, they just, I think they just need a few defenders just to give them a bit of confidence.
A few defenders, God. Right, yeah, I feel like I mean, you basically covered everything about West Ham. I mean, I didn't really learn anything coming out of the game that I felt like I didn't really know. Fornals has been, if I'm being blunt, a complete waste of money. He's been one of, I'd probably put him down as our worst signing over the last 5 or 6 years because he's done absolutely nothing. He's 2 goals and 5 assists. They all came in about a 1 month period. And then, except for that, he's done absolutely nothing. And then playing him out of position on the sort of right midfield or something like that, it's just not good. There's the rumours that Declan Rice could be on the way out, which if he does, then that's just this season gone. That's just no hopes at all for this season. Although one interesting thing I did hear, although very quickly, another player we've been linked with, you're saying left back, we've been linked with Biraghi out of Inter Milan on a loan deal,
Okay. Oh, nice.
Which would be fine, I guess. But there's also rumours that West Ham could be subject of a takeover bid. So the board, everyone knows West Ham fans hate the board. I would say that I am not favourable of the board. I sympathise with them this summer over sort of transfer business that we've had no money to spend. The only way we can sign players is by selling players, and unfortunately the only player we got a bid for was Grady Diangana, which I guess says just as much about the makeup of the squad that there's no one anyone wants to sign. I'll just be glad if come sort of the last 2 or 3 games of the season we don't have to worry for our life. But yeah, I mean, as I mentioned earlier, that table of optimistic fans which had Southampton at the top at 98%, I think 19th was West Brom with about 40%, just under 40%, and then 20th was West Ham with 8%. So I think it shows how fearing of this season West Ham fans are, and it's going to be a very long season. Very long season.
It looked like Moisey was already worrying for his life, I've got to say, in his post-match.
I just feel sorry really for him. Dejected. I just feel sorry for him. It's like, what else can he do? What is he meant to do that can...
If they rush into firing him, then who's going to come in and do a better job?
It's going to be Sam Allardyce. We're going to call up Sam Allardyce and get him back.
Aladici. Yeah. It reminded me of the season that we went down with Moyes at the helm, where he said we were in a relegation battle after 2 games. And he just looked like he was going to say it. I was pretty convinced he was going to say it, and then he just didn't quite. But he was thinking it. So, yeah, difficult opening day for them. Unlike Leeds United, who didn't get the result. People have talked about them to the high heavens, so I'm going to keep this relatively brief. But what a performance from them. Not necessarily the most solid at the back, but so fun, so entertaining to watch, so much cutting edge. The quality of their goals was incredible. They made Joe Gomez and Van Dijk look, frankly, quite average on the night, I thought, really. But the amount of times they managed to... Joe Gomez pushed up, they did a quick pass around him, and then they just really exposed the rest of the back four was numerous. And without meaning to get too statty, their XG was 0.27 from the whole game, and they scored 3 goals, which just goes to show the quality of their finishes was incredible. And they're going to get better at the back, I think, when Cooper comes back, and I think it's called Strujic, drops out, and Robin Koch gets more accustomed to the league. So I think really exciting times for Leeds United fans, and they will cause a lot of shocks. And also good to see Bamford playing, carrying his championship form into the Premier League, because I think a lot of people were concerned about
his first Premier League goal.
It was one of his first. He has a pretty terrible record.
He was at Palace and Middlesbrough and Chelsea, and nothing ever quite went for him. But then Championship, he'd always bang him in.
I don't think Rodrigo is going to be nicking his spot in the starting lineup anytime soon. It was awful. I think in the FD office, we're not convinced. I mean, half of us are not convinced about Rodrigo. He hasn't really got a great goal-scoring record. So maybe if they could look to improve, maybe they need another attacking option. I think that's... Yeah. But I agree with you, Diggy. I think, they look so much fun. Jack Harrison's opening goal, even Click's goal as well. I mean, it kind of shows the real class they've got running through that team.
Yeah, and Bielsa's signed a 12-month extension, so he'll definitely be around this season as well, which I think's the main thing for neutrals, because if it wasn't for Bielsa, Leeds wouldn't be as exciting and as open as they are to watch, and it's And beyond the fact it's nice to have Leeds back in the Premier League, at least from my opinion, as much as it's nice to have Leeds back in the Premier League, it's also nice that they're fun to watch, and I think they won't finish in the top half this season, but they're still a good team and they're still fun to watch, which I think from a neutral perspective at least is the main thing. Right, let's move straight on to... Oh, you're going to add something, Doogie? No,
that's Henry, I think.
I mean, Matkins, if looking at how well Leeds are going to adapt to the Premier League, what would you say
about
West Brom?
That was exactly what I was going to go on to. So West Brom, they just... The same way Leeds are very good going forward, West Brom are not. Let's put simply, they need a striker. They scored 77 goals in the Championship last season, second most behind Brentford. But no one scored more than 10 goals. And the two top scorers who both scored 10 goals were Charlie Austin and Hal Robson-Kanu, who are now both in their 30s. Austin scored 16 goals in 4 years in the Premier League at Southampton. And Robson-Kanu's record in the Premier League is 7 goals for Reading back in 2013. But then you look at their other attacking talent. Dean Garner obviously looks like a very good talent. Pereira looks very good. They're exciting players, but they're not strikers. They're not finishers. They're not clinical. They seem like the team that, if they have a lot of the ball and can control games, they'll eventually find the back of the net and sort of squeak out a win here and there. But in games against... I've completely forgot. Games against Leicester or other bigger teams like that, when you need to be clinical, you need to take your chances, I reckon they're just going to sort of go down without a whimper, really.
Yeah, well, they've got big Branislav Ivanovic coming in, haven't they? To shore up the back line at 36 years old. So, but I agree. I like Robson-Kanu, just isn't a Premier League striker. I'm not sure. I think Charlie Austin is a fun personality, but I'm not convinced either about his pedigree. I'm not sure what you think, Deeks.
No, I think they'll really struggle this year. I think they'll be more entertaining. The Pereira, Dean Garner, they'll definitely be better to watch than any West Brom side we've seen in a while. But I don't think they're going to stay in the Premier League, I'm afraid.
Doogie, I mean, on that same note, do you think Sheffield United are actually going to stay in the Premier League?
I think last night was almost the worst team that they could have played in Wolves, because we like to overcomplicate football, but they play the same system as Wolves, and Wolves just have better players man-to-man. And when you've got a striker like Raúl Jiménez in that sort of form, it's going to be really difficult for Sheffield United. And I thought they were pretty terrible, to be honest. It was really worrying. I think their strike force is very Championship level, but they managed to stay up last year. I think they'll stay up this year, but in terms of a top half finish, I don't see it happening.
I agree. I mean, their business this summer has just been really bizarre. I mean, they've obviously got Ramsdale in, which was necessary. And then if you look at that, the duo they bought in from Derby County, Jamal Lowe, I'm not sure if the other one...
it's not Jamal Lowe, but Max... Is it Max Lowe and Omar Bogle? Okay,
Something like that.
I mean, the point is we don't know who they are.
Yeah, and then Oliver Burke as well, who's only scored 12 goals in 100 games in his whole career so far. So it's a bit of a concerning window, in my opinion. I'm not sure. And if teams have sussed out how to play against them, then it might be a bit of a tricky year for Sheffield United. For
sure. Ethan Ampadu should be an interesting pickup. I don't quite know where he's going to play, but... Hopefully he gets 30-odd games and cements himself as a Premier League player, because he seems to have a lot of talent. Worrying performance from Sheffield United.
Yeah, Henry, do you want to quickly touch on the Premier League champions?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's tricky. It's tricky, really. I still think they probably... I think Liverpool, they could probably get in another striker, a real central striker. I mean, Firmino had two shots against Leeds, and he really should have scored on one of those occasions. I'm not in the bandwagon of bashing Firmino all the time. I think he's still a really useful asset, but I do think they can maybe get another forward. I really enjoyed seeing Curtis Jones come off the bench. I hope to see that a lot more this year. I think he could be a really exciting addition to their first team. And yeah, obviously we've talked about it a lot. Will Thiago Alcantara actually go to Liverpool? It looks like they're playing games with Bayern, trying to sort of lowball them an offer with 1 week to go in the window. I think that's basically... From what I understand and what the Bayern chairman's been saying, that's what he wants to do. But yeah, I don't think they need to make a massive improvement. I think Tsimikas at left back has shored up, giving them a bit more depth in defence, so their midfielders don't have to keep dropping into that position. But yeah, I mean, I'm not convinced they need to make a giant change.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with that. I don't think that... I mean, they won the league by such a canter last year. It's almost like, where do you improve beyond sort of general squad depth, and when you've got youngsters like Curtis Jones coming through, you don't really need to buy anyone to support. I mean, obviously there's the Thiago rumours, mm-hmm. but you don't really need to, there's not a desperation to buy someone in the same way that there's the desperation for Spurs to buy a backup striker, or that there was for, or there's always cries for City to buy another centre back and things like that. Liverpool, they just didn't really need anyone, and I think conceding three goals is just a bit of early season rustiness, which I mean every team will have, but I don't know, there's not really much to say about Liverpool.
There was no shame in conceding three goals in that game. If that, I know it sounds silly, but Leeds play such a unique style, and I don't think they were quite. It was a really tough opening game, and I think, like Klopp, I think he handled the press conference really well. He just said, "Yeah, look, it's the opening game this season. We were a little bit rusty. There are things that we can change." But at the end of the day, they won. They got that win. I think that's the most important thing. I think that's literally all that matters in that game, is they ended up getting that fourth goal.
Yeah. Right. I think I'll round it off then with their Merseyside rivals, with Everton, the only team we haven't spoken about yet, and I've just headlined with this: James Rodriguez is still actually really good? ? So, I mean, when he signed, there was equal amounts, I felt, scepticism and optimism to the transfers. Like, oh my god, someone like James Rodriguez is coming to the Premier League, but for Everton, he hasn't really played. He made 8 starts, or maybe even just played 8 games for Real Madrid in the league last season. But his debut for Everton was unbelievable. He created 5 chances, which is the first debutant to do so since Alexis Sanchez back at Arsenal, and I just think that Everton, if you look at the signings they've made and how exciting they looked against Spurs, I mean, Everton could challenge Spurs for that. If you say Spurs are a team challenging for the Champions League, then there's no reason why Everton couldn't also be challenging for the Champions League this season. That's what I think.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I mean, on the basis of that performance, you've got to say they're in the mix on early season form, at least. And I think I saw in their next 3 games, I think they got West Brom, Brighton and Crystal Palace. So
could be up there.
If they get 12 points out of those, 12 points out of those, momentum really starts to pick up. I would say that they probably don't have unreal forward depth. I wouldn't say necessarily. If Calvert-Lewin gets injured, it's a little bit thin on the ground. I don't think Moise Keane's ever looked like he's ready to sort of lead the line for a Premier League club just yet. But yeah, it was a really promising start, and James Rodriguez definitely sprinkles a little bit of star quality. I'd still like him to see him come in and play as a number 10 rather than out on the right wing. I think if you give James Rodriguez the ball in 40 times in a dangerous position, you're going to score goals, and that's crucially what you need to do. I think he's a little bit wasted on that right wing, but yeah, what a performance from Everton. I thought they completely dominated the midfield battle, and Yerry Mina had his best game for ages, I thought, against Harry Kane. Yeah. And Michael Keane was very solid as well, and suddenly those two just look a hell of a lot better when they've got actual protection in front of them from Alan. So, really promising start from Everton.
Henry?
Yeah. No, I begrudgingly agree with everything Doogie said. Yeah, it was really good. You're right, if they win their next few games, they've got 12 points, and suddenly they'll go into these big games believing, hey, look, if we get these results. I mean, it's such a good opening win to beat Tottenham 1-0 away from home. It was brilliant. And yeah, I mean, I love James Rodriguez. I think he was unfairly shunned by Real Madrid. I mean, even at Bayern Munich, he played particularly well. So yeah, I mean, Jamie Redknapp kept saying in the commentary, get it into his feet and let him do something, because he was able to pick that pass out to Richarlison every time on the edge of the box, and then it always looks quite shaky as he started going in on the Tottenham defenders. So yeah, I think it's a really exciting time to finally be an Everton fan.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, that rounds up all 16 teams that played in the Premier League this weekend. Sorry if you're a Man United fan or a City fan, but I think that went pretty well. I was pleased with that. Let's go to Doogie. What should the people watching this video and who are still watching it now, what should they go and check out?
Well, first of all, they should give themselves an enormous pat on the back, because that was quite a marathon of 16 teams, but well done. I hope you guys enjoyed it. And you should go over to Football Daily, watch today's transfer talk. You should go over to Euro Football Daily and watch yesterday's Euro transfer talk, where I think we're talking about Kylian Mbappe potentially joining a Premier League club. So pretty exciting stuff. But yeah, watch all our 3 channels.
And anything else, Henry, to add, or should we just leave it there?
Yeah, I mean, McCubbin bangs the drum on this a lot. I think keep checking out our scout reports. I think a lot of work goes into those. The analysis is quality. So yeah, just enjoy those and yeah, keep supporting the channel.
And as ever, if you're not already subscribed to Football Daily Podcast, hit the subscribe button, because we're still getting more views per podcast, almost double the amount of views per podcast than there are people actually subscribed to this channel, which is absolutely mental. So if you're still here and you're not subscribed, just hit subscribe now. We got the podcast coming out every week, and well, I guess that's it. So thank you for listening and for watching, and we'll see you guys next time. Bye.
Bye.